This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. We're online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for tuning in today. From DeKalb on the north to Carbondale in the south, from Macomb on the west to Champaign-Urbana on the east, Illinois, like most states, is dotted with public universities. Our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program is a geographer, and he's here to talk with us about college towns, what they're like and how they work, as well as the rewards and challenges of living in them. We may also talk about their past and their future. Our guest is Blake Gumprecht. He is the author of The American College Town. He spent a good deal of time on the road visiting college towns across the country for this book. 60 towns were studied. The book profiles 8 of them. They are Norman, Oklahoma, Ithaca, New York, Manhattan, Kansas, Davis, California, Athens, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, as well as Newark, Delaware. The profiles are case studies of what Gumprecht calls themes of college town life. For example, the chapter on the University of Michigan is titled High Tech Valhalla. The chapter on Ithaca is titled Fraternity Row, the Student Ghetto, and the Faculty Enclave. The chapter on Auburn, Alabama is titled Stadium Culture, and the chapter on Newark, Delaware examines the town and gown relationship. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls this afternoon for our guest, Blake Gumprecht. Join us with your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Blake Gumprecht is Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Hampshire. In addition to the American College Town, he is the author of The Los Angeles River, Its Life, Death, and Possible Rebirth. He grew up near the University of Delaware. He's also lived in Lawrence, Kansas, and Norman, Oklahoma. The American College Town is published by the University of Massachusetts Press. And both his books, The American College Town and The Los Angeles River, have now been honored by the Association of American Geographers. He has been awarded the J.B. Jackson Prize from the Association of American Geographers for conveying geography in language that lay people can understand. Again, our phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Blake Gumprecht, greetings from Champaign-Urbana, college town.
Thank you, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
Sure, my pleasure. How did you choose which towns and which themes to explore?
Well, the 8 case study chapters are each meant to focus on what I consider to be a characteristic element of college towns, those things that, to me, if we look at college towns more generally, help distinguish them from other places. So there's a chapter on college town residential districts, as you identified. There's one on college town commercial districts. There's one on the liberal politics for which college towns are known, and several other themes that, to me, really help capture the characteristics of college towns. So I began with the themes and then tried to pick towns that I thought were good examples of that particular theme. But the towns I chose were really intended to be examples. They weren't meant to be exceptional in any way. In any of those chapters, I could have chosen any number of college towns to use to explore that particular theme. So I started with a long list of 60 college towns about which I did some research on, and then further into the project, I made the decisions about which 8 I would focus on. And the reasons for picking each of those 8 varied a little bit. Some of those had to do with good contacts I developed. Some of those had to do with personal experience with the town, such as Norman, Oklahoma, and Newark, Delaware. So there were a variety of reasons.
Yeah. How many college towns are there in the U.S.?
Well, it kind of depends on how you measure that.
Mm-hmm.
And I grapple with that question a little bit in the introduction, but I also try to make clear that I don't really think there's any way to definitively define what a college town is. I think most of us would agree that certain places are college towns. I think everybody would agree that Champaign-Urbana is. Most of us would probably agree that New York City isn't a college town, but there's certainly some towns that kind of fall into a gray area in between. I do, in the introduction to my book, try to, just to get a sense of how many college towns are out there, come up with a kind of measure that can be applied to towns with universities. It's an imperfect measure, I'm the first to admit, but by that measure, I counted about 300 or so college towns. I think 305 in all met the criteria I looked at.
Yeah. It surprised me that this is the first study of college towns.
It surprised me as well. I mean, I first decided to write this book back when I was still a graduate student, and I did a research paper on a college town topic in Norman, Oklahoma, and I went out to see what other literature there was out there on college towns, just presuming that somebody would have written a book about college towns, and discovered, much to my good fortune, that nobody had written a book about college towns. It's pretty baffling, because I don't think what we have here is some arcane topic. I mean, I think college towns have a prominent image. Lots of people have lived in college towns. Lots of people who make their living doing research live in college towns, but nobody up until me has decided to write a book about them.
Yeah. Why have college towns flourished in America?
Well, I mean, there's a variety of reasons that make the situation, I think, different here than in other countries. We have a big country, for one thing. We have a particular system of government, a federal-type system of government, where significant power is delegated to state governments, so every state has their own system of higher education, and so every state makes decisions within that state about, where their colleges are going to be located, how many they're going to be, what types they'll be, at least in terms of public institutions. And that's meant that we have a lot of colleges compared to other countries. That's a function of our size, but also a function of our particular political environment. So simply by virtue of the fact that we have more colleges and universities than any other country, I think that makes it more likely that at least some of those, and a fair number of those, are located outside big cities. But I think there are other reasons, too. I talk about a variety of reasons in the introduction. Harvard was very influential as the first college founded in the United States. It was founded originally in a town that was at a distance from Boston. Cambridge is now part of the Boston metropolitan area, but it was founded deliberately apart from Boston at the time. And people who were educated at Harvard and came to believe that colleges should not be in big cities went on to found colleges across the country. So that was also influential. Another factor that I point out in the book, and this is not I'm not the first person to make this argument, is that a lot of what explains why so many colleges in this country are in smaller cities is because of town boosterism, the fact that towns all over the country compete for various advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And one sort of advantage they historically have competed for is various government institutions. Many colleges, including Champaign-Urbana, were founded where they were founded because local people, local governments, made the best offer to the state government to house the university in their town. They offered more money, they offered more land, they just offered a good situation, and towns competed for these for universities in the same way they competed for prisons and any other kind of government institution. And I think that smaller places competed harder for those kinds of institutions because, hey, Chicago didn't need the University of Illinois in the same way that Champaign-Urbana benefits from the University of Illinois. So I think smaller places, it was in their better interest to try to compete for these institutions.
Yeah.
So summing up, there are a variety of reasons that I think explain why we're a little bit different than the rest of the world, because there certainly aren't anywhere near the number of college towns in other countries as there are here.
Yeah, I also wonder if part of it has to do with the value we put on public education and have historically in that small d, small r small D Democrat, small R Republican kind of outlook on government and how and what is to be valued and who is to benefit.
Well, we do have a very different system of education, and you know, certainly more people in this country, a greater percentage of the population, goes to college, and so I think that certainly contributes. You know, again, I don't know that that explains why a college would be founded in a small town rather than a big city. I mean, I think those reasons are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we do have a different educational system. Our educational system is quite unique, and that has also shaped these patterns in some ways.
Yeah. In the book, you talk about Manhattan, Kansas, and Lawrence, Kansas, two Kansas towns that are home to universities. At once, they seem quite different, but you say they're more alike than different. How are they different? How are they alike?
Well, Manhattan, Kansas is home to Kansas State University, which is what's called a land-grant university. A land-grant university is a university that was founded with the help of the federal government back in the 1800s as part of a U.S. government plan to improve education in agriculture and in the applied sciences. They're what historically have been called ag schools. The University of Kansas, in contrast, was a more of a liberal arts school. It's what's referred to as a flagship state university. And if you look at those two types of institutions, they're very different. If you look at land-grant institutions even today, they tend to be more applied. They have strong programs in engineering. Their programs in the liberal arts are less well-developed, whereas flagship state universities like the University of Kansas tend to be stronger in the liberal arts, in the humanities, less applied in orientation. And so the schools in their beginning were very different. They drew different students. They drew different faculty. Students at a land grant, because of their agricultural orientation, would tend to more likely be from small towns and rural areas, whereas the flagship tend to draw more from cities and suburbs. So in the beginning, they were very different. Over time, those differences disappeared somewhat. And even at land grant universities today, agricultural education certainly isn't as important as it once was. Many fewer students major in ag fields than used to. Most land-grant colleges have developed broader educational curriculums over time. So you can go to a Kansas State University and major in English or journalism or things such as that. So at least in terms of their curriculum, the schools have moved closer together. They are still a good deal different, though, I think. I mean, I still think a land-grant institution has a more applied orientation than a flagship, so we still get some differences between the schools that also mean differences in the towns. If you look at the demographics of the student body of Manhattan, Kansas, a high percentage still come from rural areas and small towns because of that kind of connection between land grants and farmers and agriculture, whereas a large percentage of students at RISU Kansas come from big cities and suburbs. And so because the people who go to school at these places are different, that makes the towns in which they're located very different. Lawrence fancies itself as being more urbane, more sophisticated, more brew pubs, art house movie theaters, things such as that. Manhattan is a bit more, closer to the ground, more beer bars and those sorts of things. So while land grants and flagships have become more similar as educational institutions over the time, some of those differences that shape the towns persist to a great degree.
Yeah. Do college towns differ by region? Say, for example, if we were to contrast Ann Arbor with Manhattan or Amherst, Massachusetts with Athens, Georgia?
They do. In my opinion, they differ less regionally than they do according to college type. I think college type explains a lot of the differences, but certainly that there are differences between regions, because obviously, you know, UMass Amherst is drawing most of its students from Massachusetts and Boston, you know, liberal regions, fairly prosperous regions, fairly white regions. You know, a school like the University of Georgia is drawing from a very different demographic, you know, the Deep South, so they're going to have more blacks, they're going to have a more conservative population. So there are regional differences, but I don't, you know, if we try to understand differences that exist between college towns, I don't think that those regional differences are as important as the college type. You know, you look at the flagship institutions, mm-hmm. you look at the land grants, you look at what I call regional state institutions like Western Illinois or Eastern Illinois, you look at religious colleges, you look at private liberal arts colleges. The differences between the colleges play a huge role in shaping the nature of the towns. Now, you have a somewhat different situation in there in Champaign-Urbana because you're one of those towns that combines two types of schools. University of Illinois is both the flagship state university in Illinois and a land grant. So you get a little bit of a blurring of those distinctions as a result. And some other states have that characteristic as well. But Champaign-Urbana is you know, different than a Manhattan, Kansas, or a Lawrence, Kansas, because of that. It kind of combines those two things.
Yeah. Well, as I was reading through the book, I thought so many of these themes that you've explored apply to Champaign-Urbana. We're a land-grant institution, as you mentioned, flagship institution. A lot of research happening here.
Mm-hmm.
High-tech, entrepreneurial, business incubation going on here.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cosmopolitan, students coming from all over the state and all over the world.
Sure.
So, really quite interesting. But the first town you profile is Norman, Oklahoma, home to the University of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a really nice place.
Well, you know, Oklahoma is not a state with a good reputation.
Right.
You know, people think Dust Bowl and you know, John Steinbeck and all that. And Norman is really kind of an anomaly within Oklahoma. I think a lot of Oklahoma might fit people's image of Oklahoma, but Norman is almost like this little Camelot put down in Oklahoma, and you notice the difference pretty dramatically if you drive, say, from the airport in Oklahoma City to Norman and then drive through town towards the campus. The closer you get to campus, the more striking it is. It's a, you know, very wooded campus, and the neighborhoods near campus and you know, nice neighborhoods with old houses. That's where I did my PhD work, and I was when I went to visit there, and as I was trying to decide on schools, you know, I immediately was taken by the town, and as I say in the book, I think it probably had more to do with my ultimate decision of where to study than the faculty at the university. I mean, I just liked the place.
Yeah, well, how central is the university to life in Norman for the folks that are called townies?
Well, I mean, Norman is very definitely a college town, so, you know, a large percentage of the people in that town have some relation, their faculty, their students, their staff, or they're related to somebody that fits one of those categories. Norman has a bit of a split personality, though. It is only about 15, 20 miles south of Oklahoma City, so when you get on the west side of town, close to the interstate, it takes on a little bit of the characteristics of suburbia and doesn't, on that, you know, west side of town, doesn't feel much like a college town. So it is kind of a town with a bit of a split personality in that regard. But certainly the older part of town and, you know, the most people, I think, have some connection to the university or they're there because of the university.
In Norman, like in Champaign-Urbana, a good deal of attention has been paid to architecture and landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And in that chapter on Norman, you ask, why must a campus be pretty? How do you answer the question?
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of reasons. Some of them are pragmatic. Some of them are more philosophical. I think some of it just goes with the tradition of higher education and the belief that educational institutions should be institutions that think and do things better than other, you know, than other institutions. They're institutions that shouldn't merely be concerned with the bottom line, and they should be models for the world. And I suppose that one way in which they should be models is the way in which they look. I have to admit, I'm a little you know, I think in asking that question, I'm expressing some bafflement to myself. You know, why? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I ask is, why should a college look different than a high school? You know, we don't expect a high school to be, you know, wooded and green and bucolic. We expect it to be functional. Yeah, we may want to have some trees out front and whatnot, but we don't expect the same things of our other educational institutions. And I don't completely understand why that is. But I also think there's some very pragmatic reasons. I mean, I think universities in this day and age, when competition for students is great, realize that the way a university looks, the way the campus looks, is part of how they market themselves to students and particularly to students' parents. And, you know, as would-be students look at different schools, you know, other things being equal, you know, they may say, hey, you know, the campus at OU is very nice. I think I'm going to go there. And first impressions make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, if you're a 17-year-old and you're going around visiting colleges, how much are you really going to learn about the educational nature of that university from a you know, 6-hour visit or a day-long visit? You know, you're not going to probably visit any classes. You might meet with one faculty member, but you're going to very definitely have an impression of what that place looks like and if it looks like some place you want to be. So I, you know, quite honestly, I think one of the reasons universities keep this up and spend money to make campuses pretty is because, you know, they have to compete. It's an important marketing tool. Mm.
It's not as important, though, is it, in colleges that are universities that are located in big cities because you've got all the amenities of the big city?
I don't just think it's that. I also think it has to do with the fact that the choices of people that go to big city universities are often very different. I mean, big city universities, many of them, not all of them certainly, are more likely to be commuter universities that cater to working populations, people that work all day and take classes at night. And, you know, those sorts of people aren't going to be so concerned with, you know, a pretty campus and college life. They're looking at that school as someplace to get an education. You know, a lot of big city universities are of that sort, and so I think that they naturally maybe pay a little bit less attention to these sorts of issues. Certainly there are exceptions to that. I mean, University of Chicago is not a commuter university. Right. It's also a much more attractive university. So maybe, you know, I think it does have somewhat to do with who the you know, kind of target group for a particular college is.
Mm. Another of the themes that you investigate in the book, The American College Town, fraternities and sororities. And the case study here is Ithaca, mm-hmm. New York, which also, by the way, is said to be a very beautiful place.
It is.
But there are a great number of fraternities and sororities there. What led to the development of these organizations, and why did they flourish in some places and aren't as important in others?
Well, I mean, I think there were a variety of reasons fraternities were, you know, initially developed and became popular. I mean, some of it had to do with the fact that higher education early on was pretty rigid and strict, and you know, the method of teaching was the recitation method, and there wasn't a lot of what we would call, you know, intellectual curiosity today. And so, interestingly, initially fraternities had a very different image and purpose than they do today. I mean, some of the first libraries at universities were at fraternities because the schools were sort of very narrow in their educational outlook. So fraternities began for reasons that might be very different than we think of them today. They grew, I think, for a variety of reasons. They grew because they provided housing. You know, from a pragmatic standpoint, many early colleges and universities did not provide housing, so this was a place for people to live. They also provided a kind of built-in social network for people, and as universities grew very large, this became attractive. You know, people that wanted to be part of a group and didn't want to feel lost in the big university could you know, have that sort of situation at a fraternity. You know, there is a bit of a variance in terms of the popularity of fraternity. Fraternities tend to be more popular in the Midwest and in the South. They tend to be more popular at big state universities. They tend to be less well-developed in the Northeast. They tend to be less well-developed at little regional state universities. Some private colleges got rid of their fraternity systems because they thought that the whole idea of these kind of exclusive country clubby places was not, you know, fitting what their colleges should be about.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, geographer Blake Gumprecht. He's associate professor and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Hampshire. He is the author of The American College Town. He profiles in this book 8 college towns: Norman, Oklahoma; Ithaca, New York; Manhattan, Kansas; Davis, California; Athens, Georgia; Auburn, Alabama; Ann Arbor, Michigan; and Newark, Delaware. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. We have a caller waiting on the toll-free line in Crete, Illinois. Line 4, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is a long shot, but did you get to Johnson City, Tennessee?
I haven't been to Johnson City, Tennessee. Sorry.
Okay. Give me the information you have about Ann Arbor. You call it a high-tech Valhalla.
Well, the chapter on Ann Arbor looks at Ann Arbor as an example of how some college towns have experienced significant high-tech development. So in the case of Ann Arbor, I trace the early connections between the University of Michigan and private industry and how those connections have grown over time and how in our current economy, where the high-tech economy has become more important, and there's more, there are more ways in which universities can become involved in economic development. We've seen faculty members develop various inventions and technologies that can have commercial applications. So, a number of college towns, Ann Arbor just being one of them, have seen significant high-tech development.
What about the politics? I would imagine that Ann Arbor would be quite a ways to the left.
It is, and there is a chapter in the book that looks specifically at college town politics. That chapter focuses on Davis, California, as an example, because as I said when Celeste asked earlier, there's each of these case study chapters explore what I consider to be a characteristic element of college towns. It just so happens that I chose Davis for that chapter. But you're right, Ann Arbor is certainly a town that's known for its left politics. And I do talk about that somewhat in the Ann Arbor chapter in the context of economic development, because that has sometimes been a deterrent to economic development in college towns like Ann Arbor. For example, back in the 80s, there was an attempt to put in regulations in place that forbid any sort of nuclear-related activity or research in the town, part of the anti-nuclear movements, and that caused in particular a Fortune 500 company that was thinking of locating in Ann Arbor to go elsewhere. So even though the chapter on Ann Arbor doesn't focus on politics, there are certainly areas where politics affect the economic character of Ann Arbor and other towns that are seeing high-tech development.
Wouldn't one feel, if they were not associated with the university, to be somewhat out of the mainstream in Ann Arbor, for example?
Well, I think you could certainly feel that in any college town. I mean, I talk a little bit about that in the preface to my book when I kind of present my own story with college towns, where I talk about returning to Lawrence, Kansas, which is where I did my undergraduate work a couple years after I graduated, and it's a strange experience being in a college town when you're not a student and you're not a faculty member. As I say, it's very easy to feel old and dumb. And I think, I think you can feel a little bit out of place in a college town if you're not a student or you don't have some connection to the university. I think that's true in college towns in general.
If you went to Ann Arbor, for example, your medical situation would be much better than if you lived in Norman.
That's true. I mean, you have world-class hospital there and a lot of medical research, certainly.
What about rating college towns? I know that's a big thing now with some magazines. Did you think about rating them? And if I ask you where would you put Ann Arbor, how would that come out?
Well, I've deliberately avoided that. In fact, once I got a phone call once from USA Today asking me to do something like that for some feature they have in the newspaper, and I politely declined. I mean, I certainly have my favorite college towns, but those have more to do with my own particular, you know, my personality than to be any kind of objective rating. I mean, you know, if I could move to any college town anywhere, where would I move? I sometimes am asked that question. I might move to Athens, Georgia. I love Athens, Georgia. Ann Arbor, I don't know that I personally would move to Ann Arbor, but that's just a particular taste. So,
yeah. Why Athens, Georgia? I want to thank the listener for his call. I've got somebody else waiting. So, but why Athens, Georgia?
Athens is just as kind of a delightfully funky town with an active music and cultural scene and a very lively downtown. You know, it has its negatives. It's in the south. It's too damn hot, and it's Atlanta's growing a little bit too close to it. But it's just of college towns I have any sort of significant experience with, it's certainly one I like a lot.
Yeah, and you worked in the recording industry for a time, so you're really drawn to that music scene.
I think I am. I mean, that's certainly my experience in Lawrence, Kansas. You know, in my latter years of college, I was actively involved in the music scene there, and I suppose I see a little bit of what I experienced in Lawrence in Athens as well.
Yeah, so it's very much a personal kind of preference. Let's
let's
talk with another listener now. In Champaign, line one, hi.
Hi. Nice to talk with you this afternoon. I am sorry to say I have not read either of the noted geography books that were mentioned as being attributed to your guest, but I am most interested to listen. I knew, of course, that University of Illinois was both a flagship university and a land grant. I myself graduated from the University of New Hampshire and think that that is a rather underrated school. Just to give him a bit of a compliment without having ever attended one of his classes, the instruction I received at the University of New Hampshire was absolutely outstanding overall.
That's good to hear.
But I am curious to know, are there different states that support their flagship, their land-grant universities? It seems to me whenever I drive through Durham, I could almost cry at the condition of various buildings. We don't feel here in Champaign-Urbana that we get quite enough support, but I can assure you we would hardly be the only school. So maybe he could comment just for a minute or two, and I'll hang up and listen on which states seem to take the best care of their land grant and their flagship universities. And this has really been a wonderful discussion. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. I should preface this by saying, you know, my expertise is really on the towns more than the universities, but I can comment somewhat on this. Certainly, states vary in their degree of support for higher education. I don't have it at on hand data on that, but any faculty member at the University of New Hampshire could probably tell you that New Hampshire is known for providing less support per capita to higher education than any other state in the country, lower than Mississippi and Louisiana and states that usually come in the bottom of the rankings. So we are down at the bottom. It has a lot to do with New Hampshire's long history of being an anti-tax, live free or die conservative state. So compared to other states, we're not very well supported. But there is certainly a variance in how states support higher education. And there's also been a general trend that most state universities get less and less of their support from the states, that funding has diminished. And this has caused colleges to have to be a little bit more entrepreneurial. And this gets back to that competition between colleges. It also is one of the things that inspires colleges to try to become more involved with high-tech development, mm-hmm. and things such as that.
Yeah, industrial parks on campus.
Yep.
Yep. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Actually, I got a master's from here and a PhD from Athens, Ohio.
Oh, there you go. Another college town.
Actually, I taught at Roosevelt in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I'll sort of maybe second the motion on Athens, Georgia, because my daughter got her bachelor's degree from there.
Mm.
And I like it because it's a lovely area. I mean,
it is.
Up in a little bit of the northern part, very, very pretty. It truly is a college town, though.
Certainly.
I mean, the thing I remember the most was that when I went to visit her, We were certainly big on desserts, and there was actually sort of a house or somewhere, and all they had was cakes.
Huh.
Just full of desserts. We went crazy. But anyway, great program.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Our guest today, geographer Blake Gumbrick. He is the author of The American College Town. He's also the author of The Los Angeles River, Its Life, Death, and Possible Rebirth. He is associate professor and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Hampshire. We're talking this afternoon about the American College Town. Questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. One of the chapters in the book deals with what we call in Champaign-Urbana campus town.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the key changes campus towns, those business districts within campus, have seen over time?
Well, it kind of depends on what level of time period you want to talk about. Mm. Over long periods of time, you know, if we want to talk over the course of the last 100 years, there's certainly been fundamental changes. It used to be that campus adjacent commercial districts, oftentimes that was where the only place that students could get meals before meals were served in dormitories. So you used to have a greater number of kind of lunch oriented restaurants where students could buy meal tickets. There was certainly a time when campus adjacent commercial districts were not, as they are now, often known as bar districts. Certainly there was prohibition that affected that, but for a long time too, there was more of a kind of social prohibition that made drinking a little bit less public and whatnot, particularly among female students. Bars came into campus-adjacent commercial districts perhaps a little bit later than some people thought, and didn't really proliferate until the 1960s, when all sorts of social prohibitions, you know, went by the wayside. College town commercial districts continue to change. In my view, those changes are mostly incremental and largely reflect kind of changes in culture, and particularly mm-hmm. youth culture over time. So where in the 1960s or 1970s any, you know, campus-adjacent commercial district would have had a head shop or three, you know, nowadays they're more likely to have coffee houses and things such as that. I think those just reflect changing tastes. In the contemporary period, I mean, we are seeing some changes kind of underfoot right now that seem to be a little bit more pronounced in college town commercial districts than elsewhere. One is a decline in the number of bookstores that reflects not only changes in reading habits, but also certainly the popularity of online retailers like Amazon. We're also seeing a decline in record stores. That was something that we traditionally associated with college town commercial districts, but more and more people download their music online through mm-hmm. iTunes or whatever, or buy their CDs online, again, through Amazon. So a lot of record stores in college towns have experienced hard times. Perhaps less noticed trend that I've noticed in college towns is an increase of chain stores in those campus adjacent commercial districts. I mean, chain stores in a town like Champaign-Urbana are probably nothing new out at the mall, but in terms of someplace like Campus Town or Aggieville, like I discuss in my book, in Manhattan, Kansas, they're in some ways a newer phenomenon. I think until recently, those campus-adjacent commercial districts, particularly those that were apart from downtowns, there wasn't thought to be enough business there to support a lot of chain retailers. But I've noticed that there are a lot of what I call in my book college town chains, businesses that people don't necessarily recognize as chains because they're not big national chains that do national advertising. But I've been to enough college towns that I see them the same places again and again, like Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have one of those.
Oh, it started here.
Yeah. Actually, it started, I think, in Eastern.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
I think it started at Eastern.
In the same neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah. But there have been a number over time of those kind of college town chains, and I've noticed more of those recently. That's not a completely new phenomenon. I mean, Domino's began in college towns. Kinko's began in college towns. They went on to become, you know, much more broadly located. But I definitely have noticed a kind of slow infiltration of more of what I call these college town chains.
Yeah. Jimmy John's corporate offices are here in Champaign.
I think with, based on the history I read, I think they began at Eastern. I think it was students at Eastern or graduates of Eastern that started it.
Yeah, very successful.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon. Line one?
Hello?
Hi.
Urbana?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess the first thing I wanted to say was that the U of I campus here has, they have had a reputation from, you know, years ago, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, to being a beautiful campus. And unfortunately, the ongoing administrations under various pressures have removed more and more trees. And when they do plant trees, they plant all of one kind, and they all have to be taken out at the same time, and we go back to bare ground, and we start over with more saplings. And, of course, Orchard Downs is the student housing, which the university put up, I believe, right after World War II, was very popular. And it's been allowed to, you know, suffer from lack of maintenance. And now, of course, there's a big hoorah about what to do with it and turn it into a commercial revenue stream for the university, which is understandable. But the book is very interesting. I'm wondering whether you had ever, whether the writer had looked at Union College in Schenectady, New York. Now, that's a private school. When I was growing up in Schenectady, Union College was such a tiny piece of the economy of Schenectady, which was the home of the General Electric Company and also the American Locomotive Works, that, you know, you didn't pay much attention to Union. But, of course, with the passage of time, General Electric is no longer there. What used to be acres and acres of plant is now grass, very handsome. And the American Locomotive Works is, I guess, basically gone. And Union has come to be a very, apparently, very prestigious university. I mean, it's not a university, it's a college. So did you study Union at all?
I didn't, and I'm not sure that I would, I'm not sure, at least according to my standards, that I would consider that to be, even now, a college town, even with the decline of these other businesses. I mean, Schenectady is a larger city. Union has a pretty relatively small enrollment. And so I think even today, if you look at students as a percentage of the overall population, it's a pretty small percentage. So it's not someplace I frankly know anything about or that I would probably consider a college town, although I haven't been there, and I don't like to say until I actually go somewhere.
Well, actually, that's true. I guess it doesn't. I mean, when I think about what Champaign, Urbana is like, and I think about Schenectady, you're right. It's not a college town. What has happened, I think, is that the college has become much more well-known. I mean, I was really stunned when my a great cousin, I mean, a niece of some sort, you know, six states away, announced she wanted to go to Union. And I thought, she wants to go to Union? And she went. She got a great degree, and she was really happy, and she's, you know, very successful in her career. But, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. And our last caller this afternoon, joining us from Effingham, line four, hi.
Yes, I just want to offer an anecdote. You mentioned Jimmy John starting in Charleston, Eastern Illinois University. I worked there at the time. I'm on my way back from Lincoln Log Cabin, and this group of scruffy young men walking along the shoulder waved, and I stopped in my old 75 Ford pickup, and Jimmy John got into the front seat, and his buddies all got into the bed, and I rode him in to Charleston, back to campus. That's when they were in school. So I just wanted to share that experience.
That's an interesting
story. And what he is now, you know, just phenomenal. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Well, we've got to wrap up here now. We're out of time. But, you know, the final chapter of the book looks at what might lie ahead, and we don't have a lot of time here. We've got a minute or 2 minutes. Given what we've all the things that we've talked about, how attractive are college towns to people who are looking for a place to live as adults, who are not students or faculty, as places to raise children, as places to retire?
Well, I think they have been discovered in the last few years, and this is a relatively new phenomenon that we're seeing the movement to college towns of people that don't work at the university, don't go to the university, you know, people who are attracted to the college town lifestyle. We're seeing this among retirees, too. So these are a couple of sort of parallel trends that are developing because people are discovering that college towns are very nice places to live. And if you don't want to live in a big city or you don't want to live in the suburbs, or even if you work in a big city but there's a college town nearby, more and more people are looking at college towns as simply nicest places to live when they don't have any particular reason they have to be there.
There we'll leave it. Blake Gumperk, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Celeste.
Blake is Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Hampshire. He is the author of The American College Town and The Los Angeles River, Its Life, Death, and Possible Rebirth. Both of these books now have been honored by the Association of American Geographers with the J.B. Jackson Prize. This for conveying geography in language that lay people can understand. The new book, The American College Town, is published by the University of Massachusetts Press.